Welcome back, everyone, to a new episode of Up the Poshcast. We are coming to you after the opening day defeat to Cardiff City, where Posh lost 2-1. I was joined today by Ashley, Dell, Charlie, Max. I'm Harry. We also, after that, discussed the injury situation and the incoming of Lolos, plus whether we'll be getting anyone else in through the door. And we wrapped up by discussing the rebrand, which was quite interesting. With there's some variation in our views across the hosts, I would say. It's definitely worth listening to, and we want to hear your thoughts as well. We are sponsored today by our partners Smith's Hyundai. They have a range of new and used Hyundais down at their state-of-the-art showroom on Breton Way. Go down if you're thinking of getting a new vehicle. And with that, we really hope you enjoy the episode.
In Peterborough, match day starts long before kickoff. And whether you're heading to the pub, the ground, or just tuning into the podcast, Hyundai gets you there in comfort, style, and with room for your mates. Visit Smith's Hyundai, your local Hyundai experts and proud supporters of Up the Poshcast.
Right, a lot to discuss today. Let's dive right into it. Ashley, give me your summary of that 2-1 defeat away at Cardiff City.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Lots of negative predictions before we started the game today. We've obviously seen them, nearly 175 predictions towards the Next Level Barbell Club Prediction League. And there wasn't a great deal of positive ones, if I'm being completely honest. I actually felt quite pleased that we came away with a 2-1. There was large spells in the first half where we were just completely being dominated. And ultimately, the penalty felt like a little bit of a smash and grab moment. It was great to sort of see that into half time. But then, like Fergie said in his post-match, right, to start the second half the way that we did and concede within basically, 60 seconds of the second half starting, is pretty much a disastrous way to go. And we know that we struggle with big crowds and big grounds, and that was just exactly what the Cardiff fans needed. They were right up for it today. It looked like they had a lease of life when that ball hit the back of the net, and from the minute it went to 1-1, it never really felt like we were going to be in the game for the rest of it, unfortunately.
You know, overall, I'm not too disappointed, because I saw moments that, I thought we played okay. What I did really like is, whilst we didn't defend very well, we defended very well in a case of we put our bodies on the line, if that makes sense. So tactically, I don't think we defended well, but when we made a mistake, there was bodies getting back. There was bodies like closing down. And if we had that last season, we wouldn't have been in the position we were, if that makes sense. I just thought we got stuck in a lot more. There was moments going forward. I thought we played very well. And let's be honest, I had Brad as a first goal scorer. I also had us to draw 2-2. And if Gustav's sort of snapshot at the end had gone in, I could have been like 4 points. But do you know what? I come away there a little bit disappointed we didn't get something out of the game. Because, as Ash said, we didn't expect to get anything, genuinely. But watching the game, being there, if that's what we've got to come up against every week, I don't think we're going to be too far away. When I say too far away, we're not going to be down the bottom. You know, we're going to be mid-table, pushing mid-table sort of just above. But, yeah, they've just come down. They still have some quality players. You can tell they're a well-organised team. And, as you said, the fans normally play the 12th men. That was pretty good. But overall, I was quite happy with the performance. A few thing areas we need to work on, but overall, good start to the season. Apart from the result,
I think I'm really happy with the way that we performed as a whole. At the final whistle, I was disappointed, and it's the first time that I felt disappointed when we're going into a game that it felt like we were going to lose from the start. I haven't felt that in a while, where you've gone into a game and you think, oh, we're going to lose, and you put on a performance that you actually think you can walk away with something, and you don't. I think that was disappointing. Dale, you mentioned attack there. I really think for large spells of the game, we looked lost. The patterns I did not recognise. When the second half came round and we were stunned with a fantastic free kick, we looked like we were lost again, and we were back to January last year, where we sort of reverted back to our old ways of negative football, passing it back to Wallen, who passed it back to Bielo, who kicked it long. We lost possession, then they launched an attack, and that happened over and over and over again. It's impossible to build momentum like that. And ultimately, I didn't feel like either wingers were brave enough to take on their men today, except when Kean Hayes came on. I don't think Otto tried to dribble past his man once from memory. And Declan Frith was clamped all game. There was a few good moments where he cut inside and played a good ball, but neither wingers looked dangerous enough today to impact the game. And we've got Luton next week. It doesn't get easier. You know, this doesn't get easier. So this attacking outlet that we're struggling with at the moment, I say at the moment, it's the first game of the season, but we do not seem to have the attacking patterns that we are so used to. And we need to give this team time. I'm not saying that we don't, but it's not going to get easier from here. And ultimately, we need to get that sorted, because I think offensively today we look lost, bar from a very, you know, small moments in the game. I think we look lost for a lot of it offensively.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of this. I think that it's good that we've only been, or at least on paper, beaten 2-1 by a team that I backed to win the league, and I still do after today. I think, though, that easily could have been 4-0, 5-0, 5-1 on another day. I don't know if all the hosts agree with me, but I thought that the goalkeeping performance was very good today from Bielo. I don't think either goal was his fault. And in fact, some people might think the second goal was his fault because he got a wrist to it. Most keepers just do not get a wrist to that shot, in my opinion. I am at least encouraged by the fact that I'm not walking away from that seeing nothing positive. And that happened multiple times last year. We don't need to rehash them too much, but whether it's Bristol Rovers away or Lincoln away, we can remember games where there was not one positive. And there were a few. There were a few today that I'd like to think that we can build on, possibly with the new players, and also some of the ones we've got at the door showed something decent at times.
I'm not sure I agree with you, Harry, on Bielo today. I think that the second one he should have saved. I think obviously the first one is a massively high quality free kick, and unless you can get a camera angle where you're directly behind it to see what the ball did, I'm sure that the commentary said that it was a knuckleballs type strike. So it's done all sorts of movements. So difficult to judge and difficult to sort of get your feet right. And I think that was the issue for the free kick goal. But the second one, I think he's got to save it. It's so obvious when that ball gets cut back that the player's going to be shooting from there. And again, I just don't think he's ready. The first half, the amount of pressure that his kicking was putting us on and under was just incredible. And that all goes back to what I said at the start of the show, is that we're inviting pressure. We already know that it's going to be a difficult day for us. And we're not doing the basics right by just putting the ball forward to Brad and letting him win the headers. And Bielo's ultimately the man that's in control of that, is that he's got to take ownership if he's in goal and put the ball forwards, get us up the pitch. And then there was two, wasn't there? I think it was kicks that he was just like punting forwards. Essentially, they went probably sort of 15 feet up in the air and then ended up being throw-ins. And then all of a sudden, Cardiff have got the ball and they're coming back at us. And that was the way that it felt sort of for the whole of the first half until we got the penalty, obviously. So I wasn't impressed with Bielo's performance. I think it's clear to see why he's essentially the third choice goalkeeper now, possibly even slightly further behind Bastian Smith if he wasn't as young as he is. And I'm sure that come next week, the new goalkeeper that we've got in from Norwich will be the man that starts the game. I'm relatively confident of that.
Yeah, I think you speak about sort of players having adapted to the style, and Bielo has never really been fit for the system in terms of playing out for the back. One player that did look a bit fitter for the system today, I thought, was David Akagwe. I was quite impressed with his performance, considering that, you know, he got a bit of bad PR from Walsall fans. I was really pleased with the way that he performed. I think up against Oscar Wallin, who was next to him, who was an absolute calamity today. I don't think I rated him low enough in my player ratings. He was awful. Okagbwe sort of compensated for some of his errors. I thought he did that thing really well where he sort of stands on the ball for a second and that opens up a line directly to the winger. And I think if Frith had had a bit of a better first touch, we would have had a bit more joy with that. I think he is really showing that he's starting to understand the principles of the way we play. He looks physically good. I think, you know, he doesn't look crazy fast, but he looks quick enough. He was decent aerially, I thought, and he looks physical. He was having some proper tussles with Salak, especially up front for Cardiff. I was really pleased with Dave's performance today. I thought, really impressive debut. I was pleasantly surprised, and I think had he been playing alongside Sam Hughes instead of Oscar Wallin, he would have done really well today. I think he was probably one of my most underappreciated players of the match. I was pleased with his performance. He's filled me with a lot more confidence in him, and I hope that, you know, he will go on, and no matter who starts next to him, he will start the Luton game next Saturday, whether we sign someone or whether it's Nevitt or Wallin. I hope he will start because I think he deserves it.
No, Charlie, I completely agree. I think it's really key that players like that adapt to our system at such a young age. And the fact that he's done it so quickly is something that I'm really, really pleased to see. I said it before, I wasn't really listening to what Walsall fans said about him. I wanted to, and Dale said it as well, that we should forge our own opinion on him. And if that's sort of a taste of what's to come, then I can really buy into that project. A project that I might be struggling to buy into right this very second is Harley Mills. Now, he's just signed a new contract, and I think I speak for every Posh fan that we are over the moon that he signed a new contract, and he had such a great performance against Birmingham. And when he came on, he at the back end of last season and had those opportunities, I don't think he really put a foot wrong. He deserved this contract, and ultimately I still believe he deserves to be the main man. Today wasn't the best sort of debut of that new contract for him, I didn't feel. I felt it was difficult. Cardiff had five attacking players, didn't they? So Harley Mills ended up really marking a really like a left attacking midfielder, leaving their wing back or their right winger really open a lot of the time. So that meant that a ball over the top could be done over and over and over again. And Mills went out, but a lot of the time he'd get beaten and offer an opportunity. Going forward towards the end of the second half, he really came alive, and I felt like that was an improvement. But during the game, I don't think he offered much offensively either. He kind of sat back for a lot of it until the very last second, or the dying embers of the game, when we were really, really going for it. I'd like to see more of that sort of energy from him. Have we put too much pressure on him with this big contract, 4 years? Does he feel like he's got to come in and perform right now? Maybe that might be playing on his mind. Again, this is Cardiff we're talking about, newly relegated. But as I've mentioned previously in this episode, it's not going to get any easier. We've got a really tough run from now until the middle of September. So we've really got to, everybody's got to kick into gear and stick together regardless of the results. And maybe there might be a bit of pressure lying on Harley Mills' shoulders to be that main man, considering I don't really think there's a backup left back at the moment, considering Rio can't really play football. So I think that's a difficulty. I gave him a low rating. I probably was a little bit harsh with it, but I was expecting so much more, and I felt disappointed overall by the performance. But there was definitely some positives that we can take, and positives that I'm looking forward for him to build on. Because again, really, this is almost felt like a debut of a new signing, and that's not something that he should get his head down about. But have we put too much pressure on him? I don't know. I think I'll leave it to somebody else to answer.
It is a difficult one with Harley Mills today, because I sat the whole way through the first half and thought that he looked really poor. And actually, on reflection, it just purely was the case that they clearly had a game plan, Cardiff, and they targeted that left side. They probably knew that we weren't going to get much joy out of Carl Johnston, who I didn't think had a poor game today. I thought that he was relatively decent and did what he does. And it's no flair, it's not exciting. But yeah, Harley Mills, it felt like he really had sort of tucked in, especially when we were defending and those balls over the top. Cardiff clearly went with the instruction of stick the guy on the byline and or the wing, sorry, the touchline, and just get at him. And I don't think that he defended badly. It just always felt like their player, when he was picking up the ball, had the space. And that was difficult for Harley today. I think that it's difficult, isn't it? Because like Max said, we've given him a 4-year contract. that gives us the room to develop him. But like we saw with James Dornelli last season, we've not got the option to take Harley Mills out the side at the moment without having sort of wholesale changes in the back four. I don't want to see Kean Hayes playing at wing back again in a back five like we did last season. So I think there's definitely room for improvement with Harley Mills after his performance today. But as I said when we recorded the predictions episode, I don't think that we should be getting on everybody's back and being doom and gloom and saying that they're going to have a disastrous season after 90 minutes, even come, like Matt said, come the end of September. I think that everybody needs a chance. This team needs a chance, don't they? And even players like Harley Mills, he only played 8 games for us last season. He needs the chance to get his feet in, settle into having a new partner next to him, and then go from there.
I actually thought Harley Mills had quite a good game. I gave him a 6.5 in the player ratings, and I could have given him a 7. In my opinion, he was one of our brighter players. I thought one of the things that he did really well, which not many players did, is he sort of took the game by the scruff of the neck at times. There were times when it got really messy in the midfield or really messy outside, and he just went in and he put a tackle in. And there were times also when the ball was sort of ricocheting around and he emerged out from the left-hand side. We saw that quite a few times, him emerging with the ball at his feet and being able to dribble. And to be honest, if there's someone I blame for Harley Mills not playing, for being a bit stitched up at times, it's Abraham Odo, because he was an absolutely terrible partner on that left-hand side for Harley Mills today. He was, when Mills was getting doubled up on, Mills would have to commit on one of them and trust that Odo would have the other player. And Odo did not have the other player at all. And I'm sure we'll talk about Odo in more detail in terms of going forward. But defensively, he stitched Harley Mills up because they had to work as a defensive unit. And Frith and Johnston did a lot better at that on the right-hand side. Odo and Mills were not doing that well. But I thought Mills had a decent game. His passing was tidy enough. He put a couple of nice balls forward. He was getting involved in the attack. He ran himself into the ground. He covered some serious mileage today. I thought he was pretty good. His set piece delivery was decent. He was hitting that back post a lot, and you know, it looked like the plan was to try and get either Wallin or Akagbo free at that back post, and he got that ball in there quite a few times. Yeah, I think anybody who's slamming Harley Mills' performance in the Cardiff game is a bit harsh, because I don't really think he did a lot wrong. I think he was, in terms of, you know, the players showing the most initiative and being the most proactive, he was up there.
You know, we spoke about most of the defence now. I just want to a quick mention of Nevitt when he come on. I was actually quite impressed with him. I actually thought he'd done very well. Some of his passing was probably the best that I've seen of him, if that makes sense. Not sure what's happened through pre-season, but you got to take your hat off to him. Come on, difficult situation. We're trying to win the game. You just had like Walling gone off. It's probably the first time he's played played next to Dave. That's what we're going to call him. But yeah, no, I think a little bit of praise needs to go to Nevitt for his little cameo in the second half when he came on. So no, well done.
On the midfield, I think it was an interesting mix today of moments where they were frankly played through, and other moments when I thought there was some really good work. If I was to mention Keller specifically, given it was his debut, I was encouraged. I think that I loved the tenacity. I saw a version of Kyprianou in there that was a bit quicker and a bit more aggressive, which was good to see. He was loose at times. There was a couple of moments when he had essentially less than half a second on the ball with two Cardiff players charging him down, and he didn't have that technical nous to deliver, to get out of that situation. But in the open field, he was really good, genuinely really good. Decision-making was good. Passing was good. Off the ball, commitment was consistent through the 90-minute, or as it was, the 98th-minute whistle. So I was definitely encouraged. As debuts go, it's a tough one, Cardiff away. And I was happy enough. We just need to make sure that he keeps working and improving as a 20-year-old on a 4+1 contract. I want that to be the start, and a year from now we think this performance was a shadow of what we've just seen today at the beginning of the 26-27 season.
Yeah, Harry, I completely agree. I was really impressed by Keller's engine, the fact that he's come on such a difficult sort of stadium to go to on debut away from home, and is putting a performance that the show fight, tenacity, grit. I enjoyed all of it. A player that I am really disappointed with, though, is O'Brien Brady today. And I think, I believe he got my lowest rating for the afternoon. I simply cannot understand why we are playing him all over the midfield three. Over pre-season, he hasn't had his own position. At the Leicester game, he played the six in the middle of the two centre-halves. Today, he played the 10. Seems like he's played the eight alongside Collins as well. Seems like we're just trying to mix and match and try to slot him in, you know. You throw mud at a wall or it sticks eventually, right? That's sort of what we're trying to do here. I don't believe, however, that he is good enough to play for Peterborough United at this stage. He, in midfield today, there was no ounce or bite or grit or any danger of him putting a body in, winning a header, winning a tackle. There was nothing. He played the 10, and what he did do well today was press. And I will give him that. There was elements of today where he did put some pressure on the centre-halves. But he's not a number 10. Dobby is not, or Brian Brady is not a number 10. We are not playing a Brian Brady to be Peterborough United's number 10. We have Chris Conclarke for that and a newly signed Lolos, which we will talk about in a moment, because I really do think he's going to impact this team fluently, because today really proved to me why we needed a number 10. And I just can't believe that we're just trying Dobby everywhere. His best position is clearly the six. That's where he was playing. That's where his best, in my opinion, his best game in pre-season was, in between the two centre-halves. He was clearly learning that position. I feel like we're just throwing him off development by playing him everywhere. And maybe that's not all on the player. But at the end of the day, you've got to be better in midfield. If you're going to play in midfield, you have to be better. And I don't think O'Brien Brady lived up to that today.
Yeah, I think I have an answer for you, Max, on why, you know, he's played every position in the midfield over pre-season. I think the football club are absolutely obsessed with trying to get Donny O'Brien Brady to work. And this is not, you know, me slagging off Darragh or Fergie, but all they talk about is how good he looks and him coming to the party and how good he looks with his top off this season because he's put some muscle on over pre-season. He realistically has not shown anything in any of the positions. And I think we are so obsessed with him not being a failure and not being, you know, written off as a player who we signed for the under-21s, didn't quite make it. We'll sell him off to a National League club or a League Two club. We are so obsessed with trying to get something out of a player that's not really shown a lot for the last year that we are doing everything we possibly can to keep him in the team. And I'm not necessarily on board with it at all.
Yeah, and I agree, Charlie. I agree that we're so obsessed with O'Brien Brady not being a failure that we're too anxious to give up on the project. But I think the signing of Lolos kind of says what we're going to do. That's whether or not Collins stays, but we'll talk about that later. I do want to mention Collins today because I gave him a 7, and I've had a lot of people on social media and come up to me as well and say that Collins was one of the worst players on the pitch. I didn't see it personally. I thought Collins had a good game. People say that he was sloppy in possession. I thought the opposite. I thought he was really good in the build-up. He was really dominant running through the midfield, good at driving the ball up the pitch, very good at what Archie Collins does. Again, he doesn't look like a world beater, but you take him out the team, you'll realise how much of an impact he makes. He made everything tick today, and I don't think he would have had as good as a performance. Keller, I'm talking about here, would have had as good as a performance if Collins wasn't sat next to him, because I feel like he gives that midfield a level of comfort when he's on the ball. He's composed. He was excellent. He played us out of trouble so many times. And yes, he may have been beaten by the Cardiff press. But again, this team has come down from the Championship and is very good quality. We knew that. And sometimes that quality beat him. But I don't think he had a bad game. In fact, I think he was one of our better performers. And I think it just highlights again the importance of him signing a new contract here and staying on longer, because that level of comfort we are not going to find in another midfielder at this level. It is simply impossible. He's the best central midfielder that we can get at this level, in my opinion. And I think keeping him at the club is more important than any bit of transfer business, maybe other than a centre-half to replace the injured Hughes.
I am going to firm disagree on Archie Collins today and actually group the three midfielders that started the game today as probably being some of the worst performers on the pitch. I think that they were just completely lacking in the basics. They were misplacing 5-10 yard passes. Keller was trying his hardest. I rated him slightly higher than Collins and O'Brien Brady, but I think between the three of them, something clearly wasn't right. And whether that's because they weren't ready to be played with each other and playing alongside each other, it just didn't feel right. And clearly Collins isn't right at the moment mentally, because he's probably got what's going on and he's being offered big money, and it's maybe sitting in the background whilst he wants to make his decision and get things sorted. But I'm just disappointed between the sort of three. And then we said with Brandon Keller, didn't we, is that he needs to be given time. He's got that time, but Archie Collins doesn't have time. And like Charlie mentioned, O'Brien Brady doesn't have time either. Now he's had a whole season. He should be ready to go. The singing and the dancing that's been made about him, he should be up for it and ultimately fitting into the team. And like we've said, I don't see come next week where O'Brien Brady's going to be fitting into the team. I think that he'll be the player that comes out. And hopefully we have a more exciting midfield in front of a home crowd next week.
Who else have we got? Wingers. Otto. Yeah. Look, I'd love to see him progress, but I think getting good performances against teams like Crawley are possible for him. Getting good performances against teams like Cardiff are not possible for him. Earlier, somebody said, I don't think he tried to beat his man once. Well, he did try once right at the end of the game, and that teenage right back just immediately got the ball back off him. And if it weren't for Mills then tackling that right back, there would have been no chance. It would have just been gone. Early on, he came back and tried to help Mills, and he actually knocked over their defender, you may remember. And it could have been a penalty or a free kick on the edge of the box in like the first couple of minutes. I don't know if you guys recall. Outside of that, yeah, just positional sense, the build-up play, the lack of ability to get past a man, which I appreciate he didn't try too many times, probably because he knew he was not going to beat that. He was not going to beat their right back for pace. I hate to dig out players, but sometimes you've just got to recognise like that this is not somebody I think who is capable of beating teams, of helping us beat teams of Cardiff's quality. It's a real shame. We'll get on to the subs later, but I think Lisby showed a bit more, to be honest, than Otto did.
Yeah, I do agree with that final sentence, Harry. And even in sort of 5 minutes or 10 minutes it was with Lisby, he squared up to his man, he ran at them, and he just tried something. Otto just seems to just completely lack that ability. I don't know whether it's through fear or and wanting to be safe, but he gets the chance, he moves it forwards, he looks at a defender and it's like, oh no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to play it back to Parley Mills. I'm going to play it back to Archie Collins. And just as you think when you're going to get the ball into space and have a lively attack, Otto somehow manages to find a way to just slow the pace down. And then before you know it, the ball's back at the goalkeeper and then we're resetting again. And I think that probably the same story over the other side in Frith is that there was plenty of times today in the first half where he had acres to run into and he really just did not take advantage of that. And he looks like he's a nippy player. He looks like he can get at people and he looks like he wants to do the tricks to sort of beat a man. But I really don't understand whether it's the tactics, and it looks frustrating from where we were sat today. We were quite low down to the pitch and you feel more pitch side, but you can see that there's the space in front of these players and they just don't want to get forwards and attack players. And it got to the point where we were late on in the game and the subs have been made and it was like, okay, well, now we're doing it. But if we're going to lose 2-1, then we may as well do 3-1. Let's have a proper go at it. And I don't think that the two wingers that started the game today truly had a proper go at it for 65 minutes. And there's definitely an improvement for them. And ultimately, just have the courage to take the man on and beat the man and fail, yes, because you're not going to beat the man every single time. But you've got to do it and you've got to scare the left back or the right back that you're coming up against. And I don't think that Otto or Frith did that at all today.
I would just add one thing on Frith. Bear in mind, this was his debut. That fine, I agree. He did not take on his fullback directly down the channel, but he did cut in, and that not only fundamentally created the penalty, but there was at least two other opportunities where it allowed overlaps that actually weren't found. Unfortunately, through his greediness, I would love to see Frith put his head up. The exact same comment we have for Hayes. As you make that dribble and you create the space for yourself, the opportunities you create for everyone around you are massive. So just think about the space that has been vacated by Cardiff players trying to take you down who have missed you. Because, yeah, it's sad to say, Frisk's performance in the first half wasn't bad, but it fizzled out a bit, didn't it?
Yeah, I thought the wingers were both pretty ineffectual. But I tell you, someone who did really affect the game, my man of the match by a very long way, was Big Bad Brad up top. He gave a performance today that I have been begging to see from him since he signed. That was, without a doubt, in my opinion, his best game in a Posh shirt. He looked like an absolute handful up front. I'll go as far to say that was actually one of my favourite number nine performances from a Posh striker since we came back down to League One. I loved the way that he played in the game today. He put his body on the line. He was wrestling with the centre-backs. But the thing that we saw from Brad today was real maturity. Maturity to know when he needs to drop in and help the team. Maturity to know when to go up for the header, when to like sort of just back into the defender. And also maturity not to rise to the noise of the crowd, not to rise to what defenders will have inevitably been saying in his ear, because they will have known that he was a hothead and they will have been playing on that. There is no doubt of that in my mind. He was excellent today, Brad. He took his penalty, obviously, just buried it in the corner, very nonchalant. Even though, you know, he pretty much advertised where he was going to go. He just put it so far in the corner, low, drilled. You're not really going to save that if you're a goalkeeper. I loved his performance, and I think he's been given that number nine shirt now. And if he steps up to the plate like he did today, he will be fantastic for us this season, because that's what it really felt like. It felt like a bit of a coming of age for Bradley Honvéen. I'm gutted that he had to go off. He picked up a bit of a knock. He actually picked up the knock, it having a great moment of sort of skill where he beat two players and got round them and then got wiped out because that was the only way they could really stop him. He was unbelievable today, Bradley Honvéen. He deserves all of the plaudits. He was the man of the match by a long way. Yeah, fantastic performance from Big Bad Brad. And I was delighted for him. I'm so happy that he's turned this corner that he has now at the club, because he's looking like a really, really good player now.
You know, first of all, I just need to apologise to Brad, because I marked you down with just an average score. I tried up in it, but by that time, the submissions had gone through. And I feel really bad, because you should have got more from me, you know, and I've watched the game back as well now. And it's like, wow, I've really done you over. He was strong. He was, as you say, Charlie, he was matured. I think he got two or three players booked from his work rate. And you know what? I underestimated the effort that he put in today. And but fair play. I actually thought you had a very, very good game. So just moving on to the subs, I actually thought all three subs that come on, or four, whatever, done very well. I've already mentioned about Nevitt, that he'd done well. De Haviland, I thought, done very well when he come on. But I was most impressed with Hayes. You know, he looked like he was the only one that was running at the players and trying to create something. And I've got to be honest, I actually think he's like got himself a starting spot for next week.
Kean Hayes is exactly what I wanted to see from Declan Frith and Oddo today. And in honesty, we didn't get that performance from either winger. Hayes came on and really tried to make something happen. And I probably agree. I think I'd start him next week. Simple as. I have been begging since Barnsley away last season for Gustav to just give me something. Anything to hold on to. A glimmer of hope that we haven't wasted our money. And today, he's finally given me that glimmer of hope that I have been asking for. I thought he was really good off the bench today. He really helped in the build-up. That shot, by the way, what a save from the keeper. I was adamant that was going in. And really, really well taken as well. Very similar to almost Brad's at Wrexham, where he's taken a touch. I don't think he's necessarily meant it, but it's gone over the top of the centre half and he's hit it on the volley. And I really was surprised that the keeper even got a hand to it. So fair play to the keeper. But that is what I want from Gustav. He offers something different to Brad, I think, personally, where Brad helps in, you know, with his pace and being able to drop in or and bully a centre half. Gustav comes in and makes creative runs and helps with attacking build-up play and can take shots like that in and around the box that maybe Brad can't do. That is something that I want from two Peterborough number nines. Now, look, that's not me saying that Gustav is going to be a successful project. It's one game. But what I can say is if he can come off the bench, because I don't think he's going to start over Brad. I think that's very clear by the number selection. If Gustav can come off the bench and put in performances like that, he's going to be integral to this season, I believe, in terms of being able to change a game, which is something we lack. And ultimately, if he can continue that, I think there might actually be a player, one that I think I'd probably written off after preseason because he felt invisible a lot of it. I might have done a full U-turn. And that's something that I'm really pleased to finally see.
I do agree with you, Max, that one shot on target that we had was enough to make 500 grand look like an absolute bargain on Gustav. The one thing that really did frustrate me on the man, and I'm sure that Archie Collins was frustrated with this, is that there was a time where the ball was through and these magical, mystical runs that Gustav makes, he just decided not to do it. And Archie Collins was absolutely raging with that. So hopefully he can find that line. He can make those runs. He can drop himself off. I don't want to go back to it. Godden does it fantastically. And he did that against us when we played against them. And hopefully Gustav can get that. And we can see some of those balls against maybe slightly weaker defences. And like we mentioned earlier, Lisby, he came on for 10 minutes. He looked like he wanted to do all of those raw player things that we've got, just run at players. It wasn't quite there with the final ball, but he showed Lisby in 10 minutes against tired legs that he will have an impact on games. I'm not sure that he's quite ready to start, but he's definitely going to play a key piece in the last sort of 20, 30 minutes of games going forwards.
Yeah, I think we've covered everyone. We would be remiss not to talk about Cardiff because it was interesting tactically the way they set up. I was looking at some of the stats from the game, and this probably doesn't surprise you, that they didn't completely dominate us in terms of passes completed or anything like that. It was like they had like 360 completed to us having 260. So we're not talking some double amount. But here's what I did find very interesting. In the final third, we completed 36 passes all game. They completed 100. Like their ability to get themselves up to a place where they can challenge you is what set them apart today. And that's why I said outside of this episode, they could have won 4-0, 4-1, 5-0, 5-1, whatever, on another day. The patterns that you think from an old Brian Murphy team, Barry Murphy team, were more about passing around the back. We did not see that today. The passing was around our box and they were making chances out of it. Fair play to them on that. We've talked about the overload on Mills. Really smart. If we're going to deal with teams like that, that overload on our fullbacks, which I think we're going to know all season are the kind that can be overloaded on, we have to adapt with the midfield. Players like Keller or whoever is somebody in the role next to Archie, because I don't know if Archie's got it defensively to do that, has to go out there and help out. Because the wingers need to be a safety valve, like a release option if we get the ball back. They shouldn't be back on the line, you know, almost on our own corner flag line. Because then you get situations like Otto trying to stop the second goal, which, of course, he's not going to do. He's never going to charge down a man bringing the ball back in for a shot at the edge of our box. So it's going to take some more nous from everyone to deal with teams that are as good as that today tactically.
Yeah, I actually think that's quite harsh on Archie Collins there. I know that I've not been too complimentary when we were talking about the game, but Archie Collins in the first season when he was with us, he was essentially played left back whilst Harrison Burrows gallivanted upfield and put balls into the box and scored goals for us and got assists. So I think that Archie Collins definitely got the quality to slot in and help those roles. He was our ultimate fire putter-outer last season. But like you say, Cardiff were good today. I don't think that we never really looked like we troubled them. And we were discussing at points in the game where it felt like we actually hadn't had any shots. And the only shot that we did have was Brad's penalty. So they definitely came with a game plan today and they were good enough to beat us. They also, however, did sort of give me an idea that actually League One is not going to be too strong today. I'm pretty sure five or six of us predicted these guys to win the league or get automatic promotion. So they actually made me feel slightly better about the quality but they look just better drilled than us, that's all.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Austin, the Cardiff fan we had on Countdown to Kickoff, said that it was going to be a walk in the park. And I don't think it was that for Cardiff today. I think what showed for them was actually how good of a manager they've got in Barry Murphy. I think the way that he changed the system slightly at halftime made us so much more exposed to the way they were playing. They weren't really... they were getting around us quite well and they were zipping it around, but they weren't really penetrating our lines much in the first half. Whereas in the second half, it felt like they could basically get into a dangerous area whenever they wanted. They clearly pinpointed cutbacks as an area of weakness for us, because they did it a couple of times, cutting back to players, you know, about level with the penalty spot in wider positions. And I think the thing that showed for them is they've got some cracking finishes in their team, some really good ones. They've got a lot of players that are probably too good for the level. You know, when we saw Callum Robinson coming on, that's when it was a bit like, geez, okay, this is the kind of team we're dealing with here. They look to me like a lot of the teams that have got promoted from League One over the last couple of years, in terms of a very stable defence that don't really look shaken by anything, look very calm on the ball, some real quality out wide, and then strikers that look like they're going to put the ball in the back of the net, and just that sort of... a couple of those dynamite players, you know, their number 44, I thought was fantastic for them. They look to me like a side that are going to be really up there this season, and a side that have all the ingredients to get promoted. And I guess that's why I'm not too gutted with Posh's performance either, because I think, yeah, they're going to be a top team in this division this year. I predict them to struggle a bit. I think I'd probably renege on that now, especially if they get one or two signings in. I think they're going to be really, really tough to beat this year.
Before we continue the pod, I'd just like to take a moment on behalf of everyone at the Poshcast to say thank you for the two donations we received this week. They go a very long way to helping us run this pod and helping us cover the costs of it, which aren't small, to put it mildly. Firstly, we received a donation from Paul O'Brien. Thank you very much. And we then received an anonymous donation, which is unbelievable, and the most we've received so far. Thank you, whoever you are. We really, really appreciate it. We hope that we're delivering, you know, what you want to see, and we're trying to expand what we offer, and hopefully you continue to enjoy it. With that being said, let's move on. I think off the Cardiff game, we had some off pitch points this week, didn't we? Well, as confirmed in the Darren Ferguson post-match interview, the conspicuous absence of captain Sam Hughes means that we have a injury crisis on our hands. Someone clip that. But Max, talk to us how you feel about the fact that Sam Hughes is out for 3 months.
Harry, I'm not happy. I'm really not happy. In fact, I might even get a bit emotional. I am sick and tired of this injury-prone crisis, whatever you want to call it. I'm sick of it. You know, I've bang over about it all for ages now, really. We signed Rio, who is one of the best left-backs in League 2, got injured. We've signed Bass, who is one of the best goalkeepers in League 2, got injured. We signed Hughes, who was such an important part of that back stint of last season and keeping us up, and now he's got injured. We wanted to move away from, or at least make Wallin and Levitt our two backup options, which I think we'd all agree is a fine backup options, and have a Boy and Hughes as our main two. We now can't do that because Hughes is out for 3 months at a minimum, which really sucks, considering we just had the Bass news just last week. And it feels like it's just setback after setback, and we can't seem to find any sort of vein of luck. And it's a real killer. For me, we simply have to go out and sign a centre back now, which again also sucks, because I presume we would have plans for attacking players. We had a rumoured bid rejected for Ethan Archer. Again, that's just a rumour, but I presume that if we now go and buy centre-half, the money then lacks, doesn't it? And we start to almost see this fallout, because we're going to have to sign a centre-back. Now, I pose the question, and I don't know if anybody wants to answer the question for me, but I pose the question on the group chat. Does it not make sense just to get a loanee in for 6 months? Not worry about spending money, investing in the attack, investing in a central midfielder in case Collins decides he wants to go, for example, and taking the gamble on a loan. For me, I think that's the most sensible option. alone would benefit us, I think, more, because we wouldn't have a benching headache when our captain's back. Because say we go out and sign Connor Taylor, which I think he's destined for Wickham. But if for example, we do go and get Connor Taylor, we then leave ourselves with a huge benching headache, which is probably better than what we have now. But what do you do with Nevitt or Wallin? What do you do with Taylor or Okogboy? Because I presume our captain will start. And I think that could cause some problems down the line in the dressing room. Whereas if you get a loan in for six months or a loan till January, for example, you know exactly what you're going to get. You're going to get a player that's going to come in and try and prove himself and prove his worth to his home club. And that could be something that could be beneficial for us. And we wouldn't have to bust our balls to go and sign a new centre back or sign a new centre back. I think that just sucked, to be honest. I think it's proven today in terms of our attacking patterns that we might need an attacking player.
I think the issue with a lone player is that they come in, like you say, for what will be 6 months. I don't think that any club is going to loan us someone that it just sort of cut off at the end of October or start of October. And then we are stuck with somebody that ultimately we don't want after sort of, what is it, 3 months' time. And then we've got 2 months' worth of wages. I think that if we're going to do it, then we just go and find somebody that's the next best thing. I don't ultimately think that Oscar Wallin is going to be good enough. We think that he's maybe out of contract the year after next. So he will be somebody that we can look to get rid of next summer if he doesn't step up and perform. And then that will just be the gamble that maybe didn't pay off, unfortunately, from the Swedish division. The really concerning thing with me is actually this injury issue that we've got is that we thought that we had a bad season last season when we had a few key players out and then we had our two best players out ultimately injured. This season, we've started off even worse. We have our two probably best players in, our two experienced players, 27 and I think Hughes is 28, is he now? It's a rotten start. It's totally, totally rotten. And I don't know who's accountable for it, ultimately. That's where we're at. It's disappointing. But yeah, I think it's got to be a permanent transfer. Who that is, I just simply do not know, unfortunately.
Yeah, another obviously notable absentee was Chris Conn-Clark, not in the squad. Fergie said that it was, you know, a selection thing, but also intimated in his interview with, I think, BBC Radio Cambridgeshire that it was... He wasn't selected. He wanted Ryan de Havilland. And also, it's the second season for some people and he's got to look at moving some people on and he's given people chances and they've not taken them. And it felt to me like that was Chris Conn-Clark we were talking about, which I guess is disappointing because I think a lot of people actually, and a lot of people on this podcast actually tipped Chris Conn-Clark to have a good season this season, even as late as sort of the end of pre-season. You think about after the MK Dons game, people said he looked fitter, he looked a bit more ready to go, and that they actually thought he'd have a bit of a breakout campaign. I don't know whether, you know, he's not trained well. I went to the open training session and he trained fantastically well at the open training session, like looked by one of our best technical players by a very long way. And he's not been included, which is a weird one. And I actually do think as well, obviously I don't want to go back onto the Cardiff game, but I think he could have had an impact today. So I think if we're looking to move him on, I don't necessarily agree with it. I like Chris Conn-Clark as a player. I know we've signed Lolos now, and I would take Lolos over Chris Conn-Clark any day of the week. I think Lolos has a lot more calibre. He's done it at League 2 level rather than the National League for Conn-Clark. He just looks fitter than Conn-Clark, and he's probably a technically better footballer. But yeah, I don't know. I do feel for Chris Conn-Clark. You know, he posted on his Instagram story before the game, good luck, lads, with a handshake or something along those lines. He seemed like disappointed not to be involved. And yeah, it came a bit out of nowhere. I was expecting him to be on the bench and named in the squad. I was even, you know, he had an outside chance of starting over Dobby for me. And yeah, he just didn't. He was not involved. And it looks like he's going to move on in his future. Unfortunately, in my view, is I think, not at Peterborough United.
You know, you're right there, Charlie, because the fact that Dobby, Brian, which we can call him now, you know, got ahead of a genuine number 10. I'm not sure what's happened, why. You know, he come back one of the fittest from pre-season, lost X amount of pound and looks pretty trim, looks pretty sharp, as in, obviously, fitness side of things, but... I don't know what's going on. But if you look at the amount of players we've got in the squad is actually getting bigger and bigger with no real sort of extra quality, if that makes sense. Excuse me. If we want to be bringing these other players in, players have got to go. and there hasn't really been that much of an exodus. You know, we got obviously Poco went, Malik went, Ricky went. So you got your three, but your fringe players, we've still got them. You know, and if we want to bring more players in, we've got to pass some out the door. We've got to get rid of some, whether it's on loan or selling. I'm sure we want to get them sold rather than on loan to free space up so we can actually get in a couple more good additions. So going back on that defender one, I think it needs to be a loan because we've got enough defenders when they're fit. We don't need a permanent one necessarily unless it's a right one. And are we going to get a right one there? I really don't know. But, you know, it's concerning why certain players are not playing and certain players are, if that makes sense.
Yeah, look, Chris Clark's one that's a really difficult subject for me because I really do like the lad and I like his work ethic. I think he's come back and he's lost a lot of weight. He looks a lot leaner. He probably looks a lot fitter. I think my issue with Chris Clark is it's hard, isn't it? When you take that big of a leap from National League to League One, sometimes it doesn't work out. And I just don't see this one working out this season. I don't. Truth be told, I think Lolos is a big tell on Chris Clark and his future here. I think Lolos is going to help us massively. And I do want to talk about him in just a second. I wouldn't mind Chris Clark going out on a loan. I think it'd be good for him to go down to League Two. I think that'd be really good for him. And I think he will flourish in a League Two team that's mid-table pushing for playoffs. And we can then reassess next summer. And if he honks it up, then we'll be in trouble. If a bid comes in and we want to move him on, I'm not opposed to that. I don't see a success story at this precise moment in time with Chris Clark. And Lolos is exactly what that sort of entails, isn't it? And I think there's been a lot of negative Lexus, hasn't there, around Lolos recently online. And that's something that's upset me a little bit because, again, it was the same with Akagbui when he came in. And that's something that is not fair for a player to come in and people forge their opinions so early and say that he's bad. Because truly, he's not. If we'd signed the Lolos that was at Crawley, we'd all be over the moon, right? But because he's come in and failed in a Bolton system that I think is very different to our system. And, you know, we saw both games with Crawley last season where it's attacking football, isn't it? And that sort of system doesn't change. It's a very similar system. So I think Lolos will come in and fit in like a glove. And today, again, I'll reiterate, really showed the need of a number 10. We hadn't replaced Randall effectively. I don't think Chris Clark's going to be that man. I think Lolos is fantastic. And if Collins signs a new deal, then we're going to have a really good midfield three again in Collins, Keller and Lolos. And only a midfield three that's going to develop with Collins, yes, getting older, but being able to string that midfield three together and Lolos being able to pull the strings and Keller showing his engine today. And if that's something that he can keep up, then it's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, I like Lolos as a signing for a couple of reasons. I think he's quite rough and ready. I think, you know, he's played in non-league and scored a lot of goals at Oxford City, which is what got him signed for Crawley, which is one of the things that I like. He is a player that has sort of grinded in his career. Obviously, he came through the academy at Plymouth. He got released. He ended up at Oxford City, scored a load of goals there, and then moved on to Crawley, had a fantastic season. Obviously, we tried to sign him, apparently, from Crawley. We were unsuccessful in that, but Fergie's liked him for a while. I think it's a signing that shows a lot of ambition. Again, I'm very, like, reluctant to accept what Bolton fans say about him. Not many players have recently transferred to Bolton and been, you know, resounding successes. It's a very tough place to go and play. A lot of pressure, and they've not really got it right with managers and stuff over the last couple of years. I think he's going to be a really good fit. I think he matches the profile. I think he will fit in well with, you know, just from listening to his interviews and seeing what kind of character he is, I think he'll fit in well with the dressing room. I think he's coming. He really is now at a point where he wants to prove people wrong. He's got that bit between his teeth. It wouldn't surprise me if he came in and was one of the star players for us this season. I think he instantly takes that number 10 spot off Donny O'Brien Brady. Yeah, I really like the signing and I think it's going to be a good one.
All right. Finally, I think, unless there's any other business from any of you later, we on the 31st of July, the Thursday just gone at time of recording, announced the rebrand, the long anticipated eight month process came to an end with a new badge, a new suite of icons, of sub brands. And the reaction, I think it's fair to say, we got a lot of stick online for being too positive from a few people, but the reaction was mixed. There's no way even the most ardent critics of the rebrand can say that it was a completely negative reaction, right? There were absolutely some people who like it, and that is fair to say. The like to comment ratio on the release from the official account was better than I think a lot of people have expected. We can go around among the hosts. Anyone can go look online and see our videos about what our instant reactions are. We've had a few days to think about it. Del, can I come to you first? Have you got any more comments, having reflected for a few days on the new crest?
Yeah, I have, to be fair. Obviously, myself and Ash were part of the, we went to the focus group. So we had probably a better understanding than most people. And as I said before, I'm one of the ones that I didn't want to change. I went there proper. I'm not changing. And then it was explained the reason why. And I started to like, okay, whatever. And then the badge come out and I understood it. And I keep going on about people that I don't like it. Re-watch the video, watch the reasoning, get an understanding, and you probably still won't like it after that, but at least give it a try of why we're doing it. You got all this hype about, oh, it looks too much like Chelsea's. I just want to bring you back to our round badge and Chelsea's old round badge that look like the same. The amount of time that the Peterborough badge got confused with the Chelsea and vice versa. Everybody had a round badge. Wickham, you had Stockport, you could go on. But the badge is quite unique. It is what it is. It's not going to get changed, I don't believe. Hopefully not, anyway. And it's fair to say that there was a lot of negativity, but there was some good positivity. I also want to put on record that none of us got paid to give our opinions. Our opinions were our own opinions. Nobody paid for my tattoo, apart from my mum. Thanks, mum. We wasn't paid anything. This is what we'd done for ourselves, we spoke our mind. What was also quite encouraging, if I'm honest, today, the amount of people that we spoke to at the Cardiff game, or the amount of people that come up to me, let me have a look at your tattoo, and talking about the badge, it seems to be a bit of a, the negativity has eased off a bit already in a couple of days. Do you know what I mean? There's a lot more positive about the badge when they've seen it and when they understand it. And, I think it's one of these, let's be honest, nobody really likes change. And I think it's going to take a bit of time for everybody to get on board. And there's still going to be some people not on board. But overall, it is becoming more positive, even within 2 days. And it's not my favourite badge, I'm not going to lie. But I've embraced it and I've got on board with what they're trying to achieve. I personally much prefer the original one because I'm old, as I keep saying, but I don't mind the new one. So let's give it a bit of a chance. Let's not all be overreactionary like I used to be, and give it a go. But overall, I think it's becoming more appreciative and a more accepted, I think the word is.
Right. So I think the important thing with the badge is that both you and I, Del, we're 3 months down the line, aren't we? And we've had the chance to look at it. We've seen it. We've absorbed it. We've taken in all of the content. We've had all of that those moments, and we knew what was coming. This was always going to be an emotive and highly reactionary moment. I think that some people really have not taken the opportunity to understand it, which is fine. That's their choice. But ultimately, and fingers crossed, like you say, Del, this isn't something that's going to be backtracked on, because we will look like right Muppets. If they do, but it is what it is. I don't see anything wrong with it. I like it, and it's the right decision for the football club. As Lod said on his tweets and his video that he did, Chris Payne was given a brief and he's ticked off all of those objectives and done what he needed to do. And we've got what we wanted from this process. Whether people want to accept that or not is a completely different question. There are some changes that people can maybe say that they would make and we should be doubling up. But if we're going to start putting cross keys and two wing lines on again, then we may as well not bother doing this process, because we end up with a nice, small, badge that's modular and all of those things that the club have mentioned, if you make it this big rectangle again, well, we're two steps back, if anything. So, look, give people 3 months. 3 months down the line, people have absorbed it. We saw it, like you said, Del. The tide had already changed. Thursday was very negative, but come Friday and today, people are already starting to accept it. They're starting to understand it. You have to go back and read these things and watch these videos multiple times. But all in all, fantastic decision. A great job from everybody that was involved. And I would just like to say thanks to Clive for the brown envelope that he gave us all for the podcast. And maybe that's why he's not at the club anymore.
I would say that I really like the badge. And I was speaking to a Cambridge fan the other day, who obviously they've just had their new badge done by Chris rolled in. And he said that he was very sceptical, like a lot of Posh fans are now. And there are sort of milestones in getting used to the new badge. And I honestly think that the fans will really like it once they see it on the kits next season. Apparently, all these badges, they don't think they like them. They don't look good. That's happened with every club. But then when they go into the shop and they see the merchandise with the badge on in person, they suddenly realise that it's better, it looks cleaner, and it looks really nice with the kits. And I honestly think that's what's going to happen with our new badge. Just touching back on the Chelsea thing, I think it's such a shallow comparison to make, and it's really annoying me because people keep mentioning it, just drumming on about how it looks like Chelsea's badge. But I just have to say, I don't understand how, if you've actually read what Posh have put out and you actually watched the launch video, you can think that we've copied Chelsea or we've been a rip-off Chelsea. Everything on that badge is so firmly tied to both historical and cultural things in the city, you know, the winged lion, the crossed keys. That is such a firm, that it can't be a rip off Chelsea, because it is the core identity of what was, first of all, what the fans wanted to see on the badge, and second of all, what had to be on the badge as a badge for a football club in the city of Peterborough. So I don't understand this comparison. It will go away in time, because listen, there are some similar elements. One of the most comical things someone did was then put our badge onto the Manchester United badge and send it to me as if that was something that was going to like make me go, oh yeah, you're right. I don't know why they did that. Some of the comparisons, I feel like people are just looking for problems. That's always going to happen when big changes come. You know, people look for problems with when the Posh fans go in the GH. People look for problems all the time. At the end of the day, it will be a good thing for the football club in the long term. I don't think we would have done it otherwise. I'm happy with it. It's not similar to the Chelsea badge in anything other than it looks a bit similar if you don't even put any thought into it. But there are loads of football badges that look the same. Grow up a little bit and just accept it for what it is. It's unique. It's a Peterborough badge related to Peterborough as a city. That's all.
I care not for this whole debate about whether it looks like other badges. On its own merits, I'm not going to rehash the things I said in my instant reaction. So just very briefly, well done, Chris, for listening to the fans. I mean that sincerely. You want me to go listen to me here? Hear me say that fully for a minute. Go watch the video we put out straight after. I think we have clearly optimized, and we even said it in the press release, we've optimized for digital readability, not for beauty. And the more I look at it, the more unimpressed I am with the lack of character and imagination across a few different elements of the rebranding. I think the Griffin, let me put it another way. I can explain clearly why there is a heart in the key, why there are two keys with one behind the other, why there is a cross in the teeth of the key, because it's all clearly explained in the brief. But when it comes to the winged lion, it's a little bit more of, well, we need to keep a wing line in. Why is one wing a little bit longer than the other? Why is it the shape that it is? Why is its foot in the place that it is? It's frankly less thought through, and it is extremely corporate. It is extraordinarily corporate. I showed it to my dad, who is not really a football fan, and he said it looks like a symbol of a bank, and I completely agree. Now, will it look good on Sky Sports' new ticker that they've got, which we saw for the Luton Wimbledon game, where you could frankly not really tell their badges properly on a small format like that? Yes, fine, the Posh one will look very good on that format, but it is not beautiful. It is limited in many ways, in my opinion. Finally, as well, another critical point that I've got, I think there's a serious lack of imagination and differentiation in these three little triangles that we're calling rocks below the upon this rock sub-brand, and they're going to appear, it would seem, underneath the Versus on a Peterborough Versus Cambridge, for example. The three little rocks will appear underneath the Versus. No one is going to pick up the meaning of those. And I don't think they stand out very well. I think the typography is mixed. Some of it looks really good. Other parts, take the 1934 sub-brand. You've got the 1-9 being really squashed together, relatively speaking, because of the spacing in that, those two numbers of the typography. And the 3-4 being almost absurdly wide. That 4 is just massive. So the whole thing, the 1934 one, looks unbalanced. So yeah, it's a really mixed opinion from me. Yes, it meets the brief of being digital, but it's, I as I reflect on it, I don't think it's that good.
I think personally, when you're looking at the back, I think this rebrand is going to be so important for this, for the football club. I really do. I think they have put everything in line. We're not going to be getting kits with different color blue on anymore, or different text anymore, or, you know, I feel like that is so important. And I think they've got a lot of that spot on. I love the blue and I love the typography as a whole. I probably disagree with Harry a little bit. I think the typography as a whole is pretty good. And that's not something I have a gripe about. Now, the badge itself, I was really happy when it launched. I wanted something that was modern and sleek, and I wanted something with the griffin and the keys on, and the cross keys on. They're the two things that I wanted, and I feel like I got that. My two gripes are, A, I really think it has to have Posh underneath, or PUFC, or just something written underneath it. That is a personal thing to me. I think I prefer a badge with writing on. I want to know it's our badge. Now, us as a fan base will know, surely, but if you go to a different club, or you put it on a poster, and you see and people who aren't clued up on the city's history, and they go, "Ah, what's this?" You know, they won't know that it's linked to us directly. Now, does that really matter? I don't know. But if we're talking about digital marketing and online marketing, and we want sponsors to come in and buy into our project, I do think that Posh needs to be underneath it. And that's something for me. Second of all, and it's a very, very minor picky gripe, I'm going to agree with Harry. I really don't like the wings on the lion. I think they look like knives or blades. And I really dislike that look. I really think they could have done something and made the wings look more like a winged lion. And I think that would have stemmed away from this Chelsea sort of fantasy that some fans have, that they look very similar or identical. I think if they did something with the wings and made it more established that it was a winged lion, because I think it's very hard to tell a lot of the time with these two bladey looking wings, I think the badge would have been received a lot better. But it was announced without the Posh underneath it, I believe. And I think for me, if they've made the wing line resemble more of a wing line rather than having these weird blades and have Posh underneath, I really think the badge would have been far more positive on the day of release. But again, I think this is a massive positive step in the right direction for the club in terms of typography, in terms of color choice, in terms of sub-branding, in terms of digital and online marketing. Just a few minor gripes from me that I think would have made the whole experience better, and also the badge better, because I do agree, As modern and sleek as it is, it probably isn't the most nice looking. And I think it could have been better if those adjustments were made.
No, I think they look more like a fish fork rather than knives, the three wings, if that makes sense. But what I do want to agree with is everybody I spoke to today, and I mean everybody, and I spoke to lots and lots of people, every single person said it needs to have something underneath the logo. Whether it's Posh or PUFC or whatever, especially for the first year or two, maybe, because it's easier to remove something than it is to add something at a later date. Everybody was, honestly, I can't name one person that didn't say it. Everybody was saying it needs to have something underneath it. You look at Liverpool, for example, they've just released their new kit today. It's got the Liver Bird, and underneath it, it's got LFC. This is Liverpool, one of the biggest clubs in the world, and they're still putting, you know, initials or something underneath it. I think we should look at, you know, leaving it with the Posh or the PUFC underneath it. But, you know, that's my only two little moments.
Well, let us know in the comments what you all think of the rebrand. How do you feel after reflecting on it a few days? And also, were you at the Cardiff game? We want to hear from you. Any Cardiff fans, tell us what you think about how you think your season is now going to go. Were you encouraged by the performance? And how do you think Posh did? With that, we're there. Thank you all so much. It may be worth us saying we have moved the next game preview. So we're playing Luton at home next. That is now in its own dedicated episode called Countdown to Kickoff. We had our first one on Friday evening for the Cardiff game. We'll have another one coming this Friday for the Luton game at home, where we can, where you can catch our views on what the lineup will be, anything coming out of the interviews from the club, and our predictions, which we'll be doing for every match. And you should too on the Next Level Barbell Club Predictions League, which, although you've missed week one, if you have missed week one, you still have a chance of winning. It's going to be a long old season. So please go on uptheposhcast.com and get involved if you're not already. With that, we are there. Up the Poshcast.
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 It's 11 p.m. and we're not finished.
Yeah.
Respect the hustle, everyone.